You know, oh, are you all right?
Yeah.
What happened? What caused that noise?
I'm a brick house.
Yeah.
That's you whistling. I just sometimes get moved by the music.
How could you not? You hear a song like this, you're going to get moved by it. Hi. Oh. Sounds like an exam of some sort is going on here in the studio.
It is Prostate Awareness Month.
Yes,
or
it
Prostate
is.
Prostate Cancer Awareness
yes,
Month.
Yes, it is. And
I don't have one anymore.
No. Very sad. I'll never forget. Now, you mentioned this about a week ago. We had on a doctor explaining the importance of Prostate Awareness Month. And we go back to 20-some-odd years and another radio station when it was Prostate Awareness Month. And explain what your thoughts were at the time.
I don't like to drag you into it, but I was working with you at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking to some prostatologist mm-hmm. about prostates. And I said, I have to be honest with you. I thought everybody had one.
Mm-hmm.
And you weren't 100% sure either.
No, I knew.
You were just hanging me out to dry?
Because it came a month after we had a discussion about urethras, and you weren't sure who did and didn't have one of those.
Well, everybody has one of those.
But for some reason, a lot of people think that only women have them.
Because of Urethra Franklin?
Yeah.
Who looks great, by the way. She was just at Ravinia. She's lost 100 pounds.
Yeah.
Long hair.
It's looking good.
Sounds amazing. My neighbor went to see her.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I knew that everyone had a urethra because that's how you relieve yourself.
Yes, that's true.
But a prostate, I wasn't sure.
You didn't know who did and didn't have.
Yeah.
You thought you had one and just misplaced it or something?
I don't know.
Where's my prostate?
I know I have ovaries. You don't have ovaries.
No, well, no, but not by fault. It's not my, you know, I didn't get any.
The male version of the ovary. Why can I say ovary and I feel funny saying testicle? Sorry, I said it.
You should teach a sex ed class somewhere.
We're about 5 minutes into the show.
Well, right. I just want to say that, you know, I know what the male female of those are.
Right.
So I just thought a prostate, I didn't know.
Who had one and who didn't have one.
I know Andy Sipowicz on NYPD Blue called it a prostrate, and I knew that
wrong.
It's not that.
He was wrong.
How did we get to?
I don't know. I have no idea.
It's your fault.
I have no idea. All right, just a real quick overview of what you're about to hear, if you're still here, of the next few hours. First of all, Mitch Michaels, who's a radio legend in Chicago, and more than just Chicago, people know him all over the place. He will be with us because he wrote a book, correct?
Called Doing the Cruise.
Yeah,
that was his little tagline, Doing the Cruise.
Yep.
You got to say it like that. You got to talk like that when you talk to Mitch.
Now, be honest, because I've heard him on the radio a lot.
He's talking like this, baby.
He has that kind of a radio voice, but that's part of the game of being in radio. Like, you and I don't really change our voices at all, obviously.
We're the two that should.
I know. But there are a lot of people that they think, well, I'm in radio, I have to sound a certain way.
Can I tell you, though, even off the air, Mitch has his own little way.
He does talk that way a bit.
He kind of does.
Yeah.
I got a story about Mitch Michaels that I'm going to wait till he comes in here before I tell you.
All right.
We're doing a cruise.
So that's coming up in a little bit.
The book is really good.
Dr. John Duffy will be here at 11:05. And then Joan Osborne, whose music is just beautiful. And now she's paying tribute to another great musician, Bob Dylan, and she's singing like Bob Dylan.
Which, again, maybe if you're Bob Dylan, you should change your voice a little, too. I went to see Bob Dylan. I loved him. I thought it was magnificent.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people give Bob Dylan a lot of crap.
Bob Dylan's a legend.
Totally.
You can't say anything bad about Bob Dylan. I want to talk to her about, she has, in one of her songs, she has what I consider to be the most, and it's unintentional, but one of the funniest lyrics in the history of music. And you know what it is,
yes,
don't you?
Yes, I do.
She had this song called What If God Was One of Us, and one of the lines, and it's repeated a couple times, but I think it's the last line of the song, is, I don't remember all the lyrics, but the one lyric I'm talking about is, except for the Pope may be in Rome. And
why don't you call him on the phone?
Yeah, except for the Pope may be in Rome. And I know a lot of times when you're writing a song, you have to just put in something that fits and rhymes. And she didn't write the song. A guy named Eric Bazillion wrote that song. And that's a lot of Eric, Wendy. You can't get more Eric than Eric Bazillion. He decided he found a line that fit the song and rhymed, and that line was, except for the Pope may be in Rome, and I never once heard that song and didn't chuckle when he sang that song.
I got to tell you, she has an amazing voice, so I can't wait to hear her take on Bob Dylan. And from what I saw on video, she wants to do like various volumes of singing other people's songs. So maybe she will sing, what's your band that you used to be in the 80s?
Well, I used to be in a band called Not Quite As Good As Ezra. So maybe she'll sing some of our music.
Or we'll your see. Current band that you just got kicked out of?
I was kicked out of a band called Egregious Philbin.
And the
and
new
I don't
one
want to talk about it.
You're in, or?
Somali Ringwald is my new band. So I'll
You'll
talk
have
to
a
her
lot and, to talk about.
Yeah, we'll see if she'll record some of our hits. all right, so all that is coming up on one. It's hard to believe, but all that on one show, but it's true. Tomorrow we don't have anything, but today a big full show, all kinds of stuff.
Are you impish because you got an iPhone? What is? Why are you so overly impish?
I don't know.
You've stopped cutting your hand every time you dial now?
No, I still no. That was on my broken phone. For people who don't know, I had a phone for years and years, and it fell and it shattered. And every time I would do anything on the phone, because I kept it for 10 days afterwards, I would cut my finger because the broken glass would cut into my finger. Over the weekend, Steve, you'll be proud to hear I now have what everybody else on the planet already has, one of those iPhones.
You don't even know what it is?
Wow.
Nope.
He's been having fun playing with it, and you're impish. And are you going to call the Pope on your iPhone?
Except for the Pope, maybe in Rome. Yep. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Some credit going to you, Wendy. I mentioned the name Eric Bazillion. He's the songwriter who wrote the hit song What If God Was One of Us, or just One of Us, I think, was the name of the song,
yes.
Wasn't it? So Joan Osborne will be in later on, and she's going to perform for us. And the song One of Us was written by Eric Bazillion, and your eyes lit up. It's like, I know that guy's name.
I do. I mean, I know it's an unusual name.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is he the Hooters guy? I don't know if he's the Hooters guy.
The band The Hooters.
Yes.
Yeah, not the chain of wings places, but the band The Hooters.
He'd probably be more wealthy now if he was in the other
wealthy.
Hooters.
But he was the guy who started up that band.
Did some work with Cyndi Lauper, played the melodica. They were a very good band that I wonder if they're still touring.
Mm.
All these retro bands are coming back.
That's a good question. I don't know if they are or not.
You should hook up with them.
I'm going to, yeah, we'll see if we can put a program together.
A program.
All right, here's a question I'll throw at you. Get ready to duck because I'm going to throw a question
all right,
at you, Wendy.
Go, go, go.
What if you were driving, this is hypothetical, this isn't real, don't panic. What if you were driving and you looked off on the side of the highway and you saw a tiger?
What would I do?
Yeah.
I'd go, oh, my God, look, there's a tiger.
Yeah.
And then I'd make sure someone else corroborated my story, and then I'd call 911.
Yeah, because you're not supposed to have a tiger on the highway. This is what's happening right now as we speak in Georgia. A tiger has been spotted.
No, they're striped.
A tiger has been spotted on the northbound lanes of I-75. That happened this morning.
Wow.
And it was shot by officers. But I know nobody wanted it to end that way, but you can't have a tiger roaming around your highway.
Can you do one of those sleepy darts? What are those called? Tranquilizers?
Yeah. Or a sleepy
dart.
Are
you laughing at my sleepy darts?
No, in the business they're called sleepy darts.
I couldn't remember.
Sleepy darts and chicken parties.
That's
glad
the name
you're
of
leaving.
Wendy's new book.
So, but couldn't they tranquilize it and then figure out? Because it's obviously someone owns it, a zoo. It got loose from a zoo.
Yeah, there's only a couple of different possibilities. It didn't come over from
Siegfried and Roy visiting there.
No, they're not in. No, they're in Las Vegas. They're in the Nevada area. Police said the tiger was shot by officers after it was seen jumping over a resident's fence. This happened at 6 a.m. this morning. They say they opted to shoot it because they weren't equipped with tranquilizer guns.
There's my answer.
And they didn't want to wait until the guns arrived. I have to say, no.
They did the right thing.
I think they did the right thing because you're in a heavy populated area. It's jumping over a fence to get at people.
Or a swing set. That's what it might have been trying to get to.
It's possible. A jungle gym where it would feel at home. It's the only thing I saw that had jungle on it, so I went for it. They're not stupid, you know.
You can go home now. That was pretty good.
As the school day approached, officers did not want any children to be in danger as they waited at the bus stop. That's smart thinking, I think. Several Facebook friends commented on the WGCL post saying that they saw an animal at some point as well. You'd remember this. This isn't the kind of thing it's like, whoa, did I see? Oh, yeah, maybe I did too. A worker at the Hardee's location nearby says a man who was in the parking lot told her that there was a tiger on the loose when she arrived for work just before 4 a.m.
You would think that your coworker's messing with you.
Yeah, because it's so out of the ordinary, you would imagine, come on, here? There's no tigers anywhere near here. You must be imagining it. WGCL Facebook friend Connie Kidd said she reported the animal to police right around 4:40 a.m. Kidd said that the animal was walking through her front yard. If you saw that, though, you'd think your eyes were deceiving you. You'd go, there's no tigers anywhere near here. There's no tiger walking around.
I will tell you, I grew up blocks away from Brookfield Zoo, so I would be prepared for any animal.
Oh, yeah.
We used to hear on summer nights when we were out playing as kids, when kids used to play outside all night, you would hear the lions roaring.
Would you really?
It was kind of cool, but it was also kind of scary when you think about it, because, wow, if they escape, there are hungry lions.
You'll think I'm making this question up, but I mean this legitimately. You know how, like, when Joliet State Prison, and not just Joliet, but almost any prison, within a couple-mile radius of the prison, they always have signs posted on the highway saying, don't pick up hitchhikers, or if you see anybody looking suspicious, you know, just be on your way, don't talk to them and stuff. Do they have stuff like that near the zoo?
No.
Does it say if you see any exotic animals, stay away?
Scream.
I would scream. I would.
No, and you didn't hear the lions all the time, but and sometimes on a summer day when you weren't in school, you'd hear them too. That's how close we lived to the zoo.
Wow.
It mainly at night, because, you know, that's when sound carries more.
Yeah.
So it was kind of freaky to go, wow, you know, there are lions and tigers and bears, oh my, mm-hmm. like just a few blocks away, but none ever escaped.
Sometimes I hear the trucks on 294.
But that's different, Steve.
Oh.
That's a little different. Do you remember there was an episode of My Three Sons where a tiger escaped from a circus nearby, and then the Douglas family, for some reason, the tiger got into their house? And I remember watching this as a kid because they played it for laughs. You know, Uncle Charlie, you know, he was always, there's no tigers allowed in that. You know, he was always angry anyway. So I was watching this episode thinking, I know they're playing this for laughs, but in real life, if a tiger wandered into your house, you know, Ernie and Chip would be gone. He would eat them. But they thought it was very funny at the Douglas household.
Unless it's a trained tiger. And some people have them for pets. I know they're not supposed to. There's the one from The Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And that's in Georgia, although it's computer generated.
Right. That's not a real tiger.
And something else. Oh, I'm sorry. This is involving your phone. Sorry.
My phone?
Yes. Tell Bill calling the Pope may be in Rome, will be international charges, and maybe his new plan doesn't cover that. Sorry.
I know it doesn't.
Donald Trump Jr. shot a tiger, right?
He did. They should post him near the highway in Atlanta, in Georgia.
Wasn't it an elephant? He had the elephant's tail.
It was an elephant. Yeah.
He had the tiger by the tail.
Right. Where did he have the elephant, Steve? Can you say?
No, can say.
No, can say. A woman who lives in the area said that the tiger earlier had pounced on her dog.
Oh, well then, yeah.
The woman said her dog is okay.
Boy, which I'm surprised.
That's a durable dog. A dog got into a scuffle with a tiger and walked away? It's like, the dog's fine.
Must have been a big dog.
Wow. But she says the dog was obviously startled, which may win the understatement of the award. It's still unclear where the tiger came from. But Noah's Ark Animal Sanctuary in Locust Grove said that all of its tigers are presently accounted for. The sanctuary, can you just have a tiger as a pet?
You need a special exotic pet permit. Yeah. And I don't know if the zoo or that Noah's Ark is taking care of it and better than putting it to sleep.
Right.
Maybe they have a special license for it.
Maybe.
But you're not supposed to have a tiger.
I don't think so. The sanctuary released a statement on early Wednesday saying Noah's Ark was contacted by Henry County Police with reports of a loose tiger on I-75. We responded immediately and were on the way to the scene with hopes of chemically immobilizing the tiger and bringing it to Noah's Ark. Unfortunately, human life became a risk and the tiger was shot by the authorities. All of our tigers are presently accounted for. Thank you to the officers for trying their best to bring this animal to safety.
And you do have to worry about the human population when there's a tiger on the loose, because you don't know if it's going to have a bowl of Frosted Flakes or eat your leg.
Right. So true. So true. All right. We will take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then there's a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Yeah, get your motor running, baby. I got to talk like this, Mitch. I really do. It's Bill. It's Wendy. And it's WGN Radio, and we're going to hear a voice right now that many of us have listened to for years and years, Mitch Michaels.
I don't talk like that. What are you talking about?
My famous story of Mitch. First of all, I don't know if you remember that we met at the Loop radio station.
Sweetheart, you used to come in and relieve me, and I mean that in the sense of you were on the air after
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I'm not in the book she's, about that.
No,
people.
No, she is in the book, folks, but you would come in at 11 o'clock and I went on Saturday nights. You had the purple swatch in the hair, or was it?
It was pink, and I think it was Sunday night, but that's okay.
No,
it was,
I only worked like 2 to 7 on Sunday. Maybe you came in then, but I thought it was Saturday nights.
You didn't do the Dr. Demento 6 to Midnight?
No.
Because this was 1986, and I met you and had grown up listening to mm-hmm. on a lot of radio mm-hmm. stations. And then we met again at CD 94.7 on
right.
the weekend.
Right.
And my favorite story about you, Mitch, is I would listen to you and I would chat, and we got along, and everything was great, and talked about old times in radio. And then he would go, all right, well, I'm getting out of here. Wendy Schneider's coming up next. And I went a few weeks and let you say that. And then I go, Mitch, it's Snyder, not Schneider. And you looked at me very blankly and you said, that's what I'm saying. Wendy Schneider.
Wendy Schneider. Yeah. What's your problem over here? That's just my South Side Chicago thing, even though I never lived on the South Side. It's like,
So did you purposely, because everybody did that kind of version of your voice, but did you change your voice to be on the radio?
You know, I don't think so. I mean, Dahl used to make so much fun of me.
Dahl, yeah.
Oh, yeah, doing the cruise, all that kind of, it was all that. In fact, the last time I was on the radio with you was with you and Buzz and Steve, probably 2003, I think.
Yes.
And he, you know, he brought me back just to do the Friday thing that I used to do.
And what was the Friday thing?
Well, there was, I stole that from WMMS in Cleveland. I used to use Murray, I still use Murray Saul. This guy was a legend in Cleveland. And every Friday at 6 o'clock, he would come in and do a live, probably 10-minute diatribe, and it was like, we gotta get out of here, we gotta throw the yokes off the bus, you know, and then you finish it up with, we got to get to, it's fry, you know. Just, you know, this guy was, he got so into it a couple times, he actually threw up at the end.
Oh, that's, God, the early days of radio.
Yeah. But it was, you know, and then they'd play Born to Run and a bootleg version of Friday on My Mind by a band called Earthquake. And it was, you know, it was the weekend. It was like, you know. So
that's how you kick off the weekend, man.
You know, I would do it a little earlier and I would, you know, do my own little diatribe and use a little bit of Murray. And it was, you know, we all assimilate things from other places and other stations and other spaces. It's
What was the turning point, Mitch, when radio all of a sudden said you don't have to have the radio sounding voice? So a lot of people came along all of a sudden that didn't sound like radio people. What was the turning point?
The turning point was probably, I would say, in the 90s.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there were more people that you would hear on the radio and you go, wow, that's odd.
Yeah.
That's not what I was used to hearing. Or, you know, I don't know. You know, to give you an exact specific time frame, I don't know. But I would say 90s.
Did Wolfman Jack start the trend, or was he just one of the best at it?
With the voice thing?
With that kind of a voice. Yeah.
I think he was probably certainly an early originator of circumstance and the most distinctive anyway.
Yeah.
You know, he was, he was magical.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
Wasn't he?
And I mean, that's why you listened to radio. You had that, you know, friend on the radio dial that you couldn't see because that's pre-Facebook and everything.
Mm-hmm.
You could only,
they
were only represented by their voice. So if somebody just went and, hello, how is everyone today? No one would be listening. There was some kind of mystique behind
Susie Sunshine. It's like, yeah. Well, that's the whole thing. You know, radio for so long was the only other place to find any information. Rock and roll radio for, you know, 15, 20 years was, and even before that with AM Top 40, but I'm just talking about FM. You know, you wanted to find out when the new Van Halen album was out. You wanted to find out when the Stones were touring.
Mm-hmm.
You want to find out if, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That information wasn't in the Tribune. Sorry, this is the Tribune building.
Yeah, that's fine. Right. You're fine.
Yeah, this is one of the few stations that I've never worked at and never been thrown out of. So I'm trying to be careful to at least finish the interview before sure. they ask me to leave.
But you know? A teenage kid is going to listen to the radio before they're going to read a paper.
Well, of course.
So they want to hear information there as well.
You had Rolling Stone magazine, Cream magazine, yeah. and a few other things, the Illinois Entertainer and stuff like that. But, I mean, you know, the radio was where it was. And that's where you'd, you know, hey, we got the new Van Halen. We'll play it at 3 o'clock today. Of course, the record guys would come by at 1:30 and say, "All right, you got this, but you can't play it till 3." They leave, and we go right in the studio and play it at like 5 to 2. What are you doing? You can't. We, you know, it's like that kind of stuff.
I have read this book, not in its entirety, and I'm kind of mixing and matching, going from chapter to chapter. Mitch Michaels, it's Doing the Cruise, Memories from a Lifetime in Radio and Rock and Roll. You can go to doingthecruise.com.
Doingthecruise.com, absolutely.
Book is out today?
Yesterday, actually.
Oh, yesterday.
Yeah. Are we sold out yet, Rick?
Sold out.
Rick Kempfer's here. Yeah. Ken Cirilla also writing the book with you.
Who did a fabulous job, by the way. He really did, and I have to give him a lot of credit. We spent 2 years doing this, and you know, he'd write stuff, and I'd go, well, and I'd, you know, go in and change and edit and do stuff, and I'd say, dude, it's got to sound a little more like me. And then early on, he had trouble getting that. But, you know, as we spent more time together and whatever else, he realized what a complete idiot I am. And he's really been able to transfer that into the book. So it's like, you know, it's Mitch speak in the book. I mean, you tell me you were reading it. Don't you think it sounds
yes,
like me?
Yes, it does sound like
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So that's what we really wanted to achieve. And Ken did a fabulous job.
So at some point, Mitch, when a movie company reads the book and says, we have to turn this into a movie, who plays you in the movie?
Well, are we talking about the young Mitch or yeah. the Mitch of today?
Give us both versions.
Well, the Mitch of today, there's a lookalike with Fred Dreyer.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Years ago, when I was just doing freelance stuff, I tried to get my agent, Shirley Hamilton, to send my picture to whatever the production company was and say, hey, we got a whole great set of storylines. This could be like his black sheep brother and he keeps getting him out of jail or, you know, he's a bad disc jockey that got fired again. And we're just, you know, I was like... It never happened.
So
but,
Fred Dreyer you know, plays you
currently,
day,
yeah.
but the young Mitch Michaels.
Boy,
is played
that's any suggestions, guys? I mean, you
I'm
know,
chime in with Matthew McConaughey.
Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, that's actually really
yeah.
good.
Yeah. 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 Okay.
I love the cover of the book. There's you and a sea of people. Where was that taken?
That was shot August of 1979 at Navy Pier, Chicago Fest. I was doing 2 to 6 in the afternoon on the Loop and. That place was so crazy and so much fun and so hot. Remember, Navy Pier was a two-story Quonset hut, okay? That's all it was. It had a metal roof, and it was just hollow inside, and it was so
like a
hot.
Lot of radio people.
Well, that too, yes. yes. Do we want to name names now or
yes.
at the end of the interview?
Like, you know,
we got some. There's a long list in the book, but you know. But this place was hot. We had a booth, and it was probably about 8 feet square, and it was about 4 feet off the ground. Had a plywood railing around it and a little glass railing around the top of that. And I was, you know, by 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we're doing breaks, and I'm out in the crowd. And we started broadcasting at 10 o'clock in the morning. By 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we probably had 5,000-6,000 people
wow.
around the booth. And, you know, I'd just go out and do breaks in the crowd. It wasn't wireless mic. You just took
the
long cord and stuff like that. So I'm out there and I do one of these. And this photographer, Bill Sosin, is up in the thing. And he goes, hey, let's get a shot of you with, you know. And it was so funny. It was a great shot. I remembered it. And for years, I had thought that Paul Natkin, his partner, had taken it. Paul said, no, I don't have that. A year ago, my birthday in March, Susie and my lady and I are coming back from having brunch down here, and she's looking on her phone. She goes, oh, my, look at this. Here's a picture some guy sent you for your birthday. And Bill Sosin had posted this picture, and I'm like, oh, my goodness. I've been looking for this.
Show it to Bill. This is like the best picture.
Yeah, it's.
And if you need to see it, listeners, you need to buy the book. That's what you need to do. You can go doingthecruise.com. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back because you are talking about naming names.
Oh, absolutely.
We will talk about that.
Wendy Schneider.
That's right, man. That's what I said. So I have to read this text in the voice. It's like, Ooh, yeah. Put your paycheck in your pocket. Yeah. Flip the boss the bird. Yeah.
Clean off the desk and get the hell out of there.
You're doing an impression of yourself. I've never seen that before.
I guess.
That's beautiful.
Just an acid flashback for me. It's like, you know, it's like.
Mitch Michaels is our guest. It's Bill and Wendy. More in a moment. WGN.
All right, Mitch Michaels is joining us, Bill and Wendy, here on 720 WGN. Listen, you really have paved the way for a lot of other DJs. You were instrumental in getting XRT off the ground.
I was there at the beginning and then went back and helped them go full time, too.
Did you think that that would work? Because it obviously did work, and it worked well. But on paper, you go, boy, I'm not positive this will work.
You know what? It was one of those things. The guy that gets no credit, and he was a very strange guy, but the guy that actually started the musical circumstance at XRT was a guy named Don Bridges. Mm-hmm. And he was a very strange fellow. I believe he might have worked at DAI briefly.
Oh, yeah?
He was a California guy. He bought Midnight to Six 7 nights a week, okay? And Danny Lee, you know, gee, you're going to pay me for this, and he's going to, you know, do his own brokered time and sell his own commercials. And he needed somebody. He was doing it the first couple of months by himself. And I was out of work, and he approached me and said, hey, you want to do Saturday and Sunday night? Not the most desirable time, but, right. You know, it was...
great listening audience,
well,
though.
You know, it was very cool, and obviously it was so funny because we're out in the blockhouse out there, on 4949 West Belmont, okay? And we had a room, probably about 20 by 20. There was a desk and a microphone. And you looked at the glass, and the engineer had the turntable and all the controls in the other room. So you had to take the music in there and tell him what you wanted.
Cut number or whatever.
Exactly. And you sat in the room and did this, and when you could hear the music, obviously. But I would schlep probably 300 albums from home. We had albums there, but, I mean, it was, you know, a limited library.
Right.
And so I'd bring, you know, stuff in from home for two nights, you know. You schlep 300 albums in the back of your car and then take them home and then bring them back. And it's like, wow, this is, you know. And what happened was he got more time. He moved it to 10 o'clock. And John Platt, who'd been on GLD and then had been on DAI, had just gotten fired from DAI. And Bridges brought him in and gave him 10 to 1 Monday through Friday. And I'm looking at Bridges going, what are you doing? Well, hey, man, you know. Well, so I called Jim Davis, the program director at DAI. He had an opening. He hired me, and I went to ABC. He was like, see ya. I got to go. You know, it's like.
And then The Loop, of course, Steve Dahl and Gary Meyer doing Disco Demolition. And you were the program director at the time?
No, I actually wasn't. Jesse Bullitt was
that's right.
I became program director about 4 or 5 months later. He was a California guy. He was here from February to about late November, and it started getting real cold, and he decided he wanted to go back to San Diego.
Smart move, probably.
I guess. You know, he was a very Southern California kind of guy.
So when everybody's storming the field at Comiskey and the second game for the Detroit Tigers not happening, you got a chant started.
Well, I actually did play-by-play with Harry and Jimmy for the first game for a couple of innings, which was one of my bucket list
things
for all time. It was like, because I actually got into radio because I wanted to do sports. But there was no sports jobs, and I went, well,
not much cruising sports world.
I got some rock and roll acumen over here too, so you know it's like. The fun part about that was trying to explain to them what was going on. You know, Jimmy's going, these are not baseball fans. I said, you're right, Jimmy, but they are baseball fans and they're rock fans. I said, let's call them sports rockers, okay? You know, Jimmy still did, you know, so did that. I'm up in the suite next to the broadcast booth, and the craziness is going on the field. They've already blown up the records, and Steve and Gary and Lorelei are whisk off in the Jeep. Yep. I love you. Have a wonderful mom. Thank you. And I'm talking about you, not Laurel.
Oh, okay.
But,
you know.
But so Mike Vec comes to me and he goes, dude,
I need your help.
Get in the public address and see what you can do about getting these people off the field. So I did what we do at concerts, which was back to your seats, back to your seats. And I
anybody
people,
listen to
the,
you?
You know what? We got a chant going. Some of the people who weren't on the field, you know, I think they were either feeling lonely because there was probably more people on the field than were off. And they wanted, hey, come on back. We're kind of lonely over. I got better seats now. What are we doing? You know, and so it was.
You killed me.
Well, here's the best part. Harry, who'd been in the bard's room, comes back up to the booth. What the hell's going on up here? You know, and he takes. We had a little momentum. By then, the damage was done. If we'd got him off the field right that moment, you know, second base was missing, home plate was missing. There was a couple of large burn marks out in center field. It was like, are you kidding me? But he, you know, he started going, you know, let's get back to our season. We can play some baseball, you know. And then he starts singing, take me out to the ball game.
That
like,
worked.
I knew we were all done then when that, and I don't, let me tell you something. Mm-hmm. Harry Carey, one of my all-time idols. I've, you know, loved him for years, loved him with the White Sox, loved him with the Cubs, you know.
Yeah.
So this is by no means any shot at Harry at all. It was just, you know, guys, tell him what's going on before he comes up.
Yeah.
To, like, you know, give me another Budweiser over here and we'll get these people off the field. Like,
Mitch, in the book, you're incredibly honest about your life and about your career, and you do name names. Name a couple names. When did things get uncomfortable for you sometimes?
Well, which time? People say, yeah, where have you worked in Chicago? I say, well, I've been fired from most of the good stations in town, sometimes more than once, you know.
And still on the air now at the River.
You know, well, you know, it's funny. Steve Sanders last week on WGN TV asked me about that. I said, yeah, I've been fired from all these different places. I said, you know what? All those guys, bye-bye, they're all gone. I'm still here. So that says something. You know what? I mean, there was a lot of guys that when I met them, I mean, third or fourth PD through a station or whatever else, I had a feeling. This is the guy. You know, I mean, Bill Todd at WDAI was like the fourth PD I had. And in the book, there's a great story about me doing something to him at a Christmas party. And, you know, he didn't fire me for another 6 months, which is surprising.
Yeah.
But, you know, I replaced Jesse Bullitt at the Loop. And my deal there was Radio and Records. The headline 1 week was Michaels gets Loop. The next week, Loop falls 7349. Now, you know, it's like, okay, if you're close to an explosion, you're going to get splattered, okay?
Yeah.
It wasn't my book, but perception is reality, okay? And, you know, that was a big drop. We'd had a huge book the book before, and so the next two books declined. So after three bad books, one of which wasn't mine, they decided they wanted to make a change. And I was not the picked heir to Jesse Bullitt anyway. Lee Abrams was not a fan of mine, and I wasn't a fan of his. And I say that in the book. It's like, you know, he and I had a couple of dealings that I wasn't real wild about him anyway. You know, not the most forthright guy, okay?
There are more in this book. Mitch, I wish we had more time. I do want to mention that you can find all these little radio nuggets in the book, Doing the Cruise, Memories from a Lifetime in Radio and Rock and Roll. Mitch Michaels, go to dointhecruise.com.
Yeah, baby.
I do want to mention that I read the part, again, mixing and matching, about your son Spencer and his tragic loss, and my condolences, and you wrote that beautifully.
Well, you know what? It's something that I would never wish on anybody. It's a very tragic circumstance, but I wanted to express it. And I hope that if there's parents out there that are struggling with their kids, that maybe this will help a little bit. Anyway, you know.
Thank you for being so honest about it, because I bet it will help some people. Definitely. You're doing the cruise, baby.
Yeah.
I love you. Yeah. I love you on the air. I love you off the air. The book is fantastic.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mitch. Appreciate you coming up.
Thanks for having
us on. Come on, talk like this just a little bit.
I can't talk like that.
Yeah, no, you've got to kind of turn your mouth a little bit.
I can't do it.
This is Bill. This is Bill and Wendy doing the cruise.
Doingthecruise.com, Mitch Michaels. Thank you so much. We'll hear you on the river.
Thank you.
Mitch. Quick break, then some news, then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Dr. John Duffy joins us right now in studio, as he does every other week, and we talk about several different types of issues, mostly having to do with the psychological balance of your children. Here's a quick question. I don't know if you saw this, John, but I found this article over the weekend, and I wanted to bring this up with you. There's a lady in England who is an actress and a singer, and her name probably doesn't mean much to most Americans. Her name is Stacey Solomon, but over in the UK, she's extremely popular.
Right.
She's on a show called The X Factor, which is one of the talent shows. Everybody in England knows about Stacey Solomon. So about a week or so ago, she posted pictures online of herself with her two children. One of them is 9 years old. Her oldest son is 9. Her youngest son is 5.
Right.
And in the pictures, they are bathing together. They're in the bathtub, Stacey and her two young kids. And people blasted her online saying, what are you doing? This isn't good for the kids. It's not good for you. It's not good for me to look at this.
Right.
Don't be posting pictures of yourself taking a bath with a 9-year-old and a 5-year-old. But she stands by it. She calls this family time. She says, this is the time where our family can just sit around and talk in the bathtub. What are your thoughts on this?
So, you know, I have two kind of competing thoughts on it, because that being family time, I think a lot of us can think back and think like, yeah, our family used to do that, you know, and that wasn't the end of the world. And that wasn't, there was nothing nefarious or awful going on there. I think where you cross the line is when you post it, you know, because we're always modeling for our kids and we're looking to teach them like good boundaries, good online behavior, control of their lives and their bodies and their images. And I think that's where this kind of falls apart for her a little bit, is that she is making these decisions for her kids. When I first heard this story, I was thinking of something I experienced recently where I was with another family and the mom has a 9-year-old son and she asked him, hey, I really want to tell Dr. Duffy this story. Is this okay with you? Mm-hmm. And he said, I'd really rather you didn't. And suddenly the kid had some control, like, you know, okay, mm-hmm. okay. And she honored that. Here, these kids have no agency over what happens, over their image. And for better or worse, there is this hint that we all feel of impropriety somehow, right? When we see something like that, mm-hmm. it stops us in our tracks and we ask the question of ourselves, is this right or is it wrong? And my bias would be, don't put your family under that kind of a lens. It's really, you know what I mean? It doesn't do anybody any good. Right. I don't think it gives people a whole lot of a feel-good moment. I think for most of us, it takes us back a little bit because we feel implicated in some odd, perverse moment yeah. that we don't necessarily ask to be a part of.
Yeah.
But if it's not being, and I'm just like an apologist for different versions of it, because if there is nothing untoward and it's not weird and we don't know about it, is it our business what goes on at someone else's house if no one's being affected by it?
Honestly, not at all. Not at all. I mean, you know.
I wouldn't do it. We don't, you know, all bathe together. First of all, because the tub's not big enough.
Oh.
But but seriously, I don't choose to do it. But I mean, really, if it's not bothering anybody, does that make it right or wrong? I hate the judgment of right or wrong, because what works for you may not work for someone else.
I agree completely about the judgment piece. I mean, you know, I think too, and what she ran into was, I think, pages and pages yeah. and pages of judgment.
92% of the people who responded, and there were hundreds and hundreds of people who commented on this, so 92% of them said, this is not a good idea. Stop bathing with your 9-year-old kid.
Right, right, right. So even though I agree with you, Wendy, that, you know, like, there's really nothing wrong with this, and you know, and it probably does foster, as odd as it sounds, this togetherness and these memories that they're focused, that they're kind of fostering together. But because we can kind of predict that a whole lot of people are going to respond negatively to that, I don't see the utility of putting yourself under that kind of scrutiny, having to hit like tennis balls, all
right.
those objections.
She put herself in that situation, yeah. pretty much.
Can I spin it a slightly different way?
Please.
Let's say instead of Stacy, that this is a guy, this is a man who is bathing with his daughters, and they are 9 years old and 5 years old. Does that make it different?
I think Wendy's point still stands.
Yeah.
I think it's like, you know, that doesn't mean anything more or less wrong is going on. But whether we like it or not, that public perception out there is, ooh, that's even creepier.
Right.
And, it's, you know, weird, and it's weird, but it's not necessarily
wrong.
Wrong.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Not, again,
it's
not
unusual.
That I do it. It is unusual.
Yeah.
But if there's no, you know, issues going on and they're truly just taking a bath, you know, I wouldn't do it. I don't condone it. But who does it hurt if no one's being affected in a negative way?
And in a lot of cultures, including this one, not that long ago, the tipping point was adolescence. When you know, the onset of adolescence, okay, we've got to call that. That becomes inappropriate. But these kids are younger than that.
Right,
so
right.
I agree. I think we do a lot of unnecessary judging, and I think that's escalating, and I don't like that.
Yeah.
But I really don't like the idea of putting your pressure and your kids under that kind of a lens, you know, where you know they're going to get negative feedback.
That's
and you
true.
As a parent are going to get negative
right.
feedback.
In one of the versions of the story, not the version I have in front of me, but the one I saw over the weekend, it's the 9-year-old boy who says, I wouldn't mind some alone time when I'm taking a bath. I know that you like this to be family time, but this is getting a little weird for me. Once one of your kids comments on it, isn't it time to maybe take a step back and look at it differently?
I think that is like wisdom from a 9-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a good cue that, you know, like, okay.
Feels kind
like
of like a 9-year-old.
Yeah.
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 But finally, time to bathe alone.
At the age of 9, if my mom were to have suggested that, I would have been sick to my stomach for a while. I would have just went, no, I'm not going to bathe with you right now.
Right.
No, thank you, though.
Yeah. So
thank you, though.
I appreciate the offer, but I've decided to not bathe anymore.
Yeah, the thank you, though, is very polite.
Yeah.
But you're right. I, you know, to my thinking, 9 is a little old, too.
Yeah.
But then different kids mature at different rates, too, you know.
Yeah.
And so for some kids, it'd be 7. And they'd be like, nope, get out. I want my own time.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to honor that. You know what I mean? If your kid wants some privacy,
yeah,
I think it's important to give it to them. And that is a really, really sound boundary. And it would be a mistake, in my mind,
yeah,
to negate that in any way.
Right.
I had a job and I was smoking and drinking at 5. So I could have already handled kidding.
Easily,
totally
sure.
Kidding, because people are going to say, really? No.
It was 6.
Scott is on the line. He's called us 312-981-7200. Scott, you have a comment or question for Dr. Duffy?
I have a comment, yeah. There used to be a time where we had lines, and, you know, you would go over the line. There's certain lines drawn. It seems nowadays these lines are just blurred. Most people know a 9-year-old shouldn't bathe with his mother, not because there's anything perverted going on, but there's a due process where you grow up. So let's just say, what is the line now? Should it be 10, 12, 14, 18? There's a time we're getting so worried about being upsetting other people. There's things that are wrong. Even your radio show, you can't swear on the radio, but certain people swear in public. So where are the lines being drawn anymore? This woman, she may not have had an alternative motive, but what she did is wrong. Let's face it, it's wrong.
Well, you know, I think that there might be a degree of relativity to that, Scott, if I'm being perfectly honest. I think what's right for some family might be wrong for another. So, you know, like I said a moment ago, there might be 6 or 7-year-olds who are like, hey, you know what? I am not bathing with you, mom or dad. And some kids as old as 9 might be okay with that. Honestly, I agree with you. I don't think I would do it. And I think most of us would say, ooh, that feels a little iffy. That feels like it crosses the line. And it's awfully close. I'm with you there. But I think it's important that parents make that judgment, pay attention to what their kids are, where their kids are, and what their kids' inclinations are. And to put it online, I think that's where we run into a real problem, because then, you know, you open yourself and your kids up to all sorts of scrutiny and negative commentary.
That kid's friends are going to see this online and go,
boy, your
do
mom's
you want to play
hot.
Baseball? Are you going to be... Are you going to be bathing with your
Thanks,
mom
Scott.
Tomorrow? I want to play, but you're obviously you're busy.
And 3 or 4 years from now,
yeah,
that doesn't go away. What we forget about is that somebody
yeah
can dig into the archives
right
once your kid's in high school and say, right, hey, I found a picture of you naked in the tub with your
yeah
mom. You know?
Weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Dr. John Duffy is here. The Available Parent is his book. He has podcasts right here at WGN Radio. Stick around. More ahead. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, we're talking with Dr. John Duffy, a clinical psychologist. His book is called The Available Parent. You can listen to his podcast, Undo Anxiety. We were talking about
not
this.
The unbathable parent, Wendy. Let me just make that clear right now. That's a totally different book.
First of all, we were going to cover something about kids going away to school, and there are some podcasts that you have up about that that I just want to send people that way. We've called an audible with the listeners, but I've seen people post stuff on Facebook that, oh, it's been a hard time for my daughter, and this woman's talking to her friends, and then the daughter chimes in and just puts a little post, I miss you, Mom, with a sad face, and it's like breaking my heart, and then I'm feeling guilty because I made Michael go to a community college, so I didn't have to let go of him, but there's a lot of... It's quite an adjustment to everyone, isn't it?
It's a huge adjustment. And, you know, and we lay out this expectation that it's going to be great, right? And that you know, this is going to be the best 4 years of your life. And everything on Instagram and Snapchat suggests the same. So to be out there and to feel lonely, off kilter, you know, having a hard time getting to class, depressed, anxious, it's really, really difficult to be in those shoes and away from home permanently for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. So check out your podcast. They are at WGNplus.com, and also you can find them on iTunes and on your Facebook page and such. We were talking about the bathing incident. That's what I'm going to call it now.
Sure.
And someone said, how and when do you start the discussion about sex and their maturing bodies? I have 10 and 8-year-old boys.
I always figure that if a parent is asking me that question, it's time. Because there's a reason it's on your mind. And you may be thinking back to your childhood, back in my childhood, and I think we've talked about this before. My parents did everything they could to avoid that talk. Now, you cannot do that because there are ways to find out online, and kids talk about sex in a more open way. And I think this is not a bad thing, by the way, in a more open way than we did. So we want our voices in that mix. And even as early as 8, 7 years old, you want to start that discussion. You don't have to get deep and anatomical about it, but you have to start that discussion about what sex is. And you can't be cagey about it. It has nothing to do with the stork. You know, it has to do with, you know, two people who are engaged in a relationship together. Mm-hmm. And you want to start that dialogue as early as 8 years old, for sure. If that were 12 or 13, 30 years ago, it is definitely 7 or 8 now.
It's interesting the wording you just used, because there was a time not long ago that a parent would have said, when two people have been in a relationship for a long time and are in love and are married.
That's what I did.
It's not. Oh, did you
I
still
did,
say
but
it?
Dylan really asked before Michael did, and Dylan's the younger one by 3.5 years, and he heard a rumor where babies come from, and it wasn't the proper thing, so I wanted to set it straight, and I'm like, well, you're close, but it... The baby arrives from a different area, and they all went, ew, gross.
Right?
And then I'm like, well, we'll talk about it later. And then it just opened up the floodgates, and they asked questions. And, you know, all right, we know where babies come from, but how do babies get inside of you? And I'm like, okay. They're
the
boys.
That's maybe where you go to the internet.
But Bill, to your point, I did say when two people are in love and they're married.
Right.
But that was when they were 6 and 9, and then now I don't say that anymore.
Right.
And but I at think that age, I did.
At that age, there's nothing wrong with that, right? You're introducing the topic, you're opening up a dialogue, and that's what you want to do. You know, a lot of parents want it, and come into my office and say, I want to know what talk I need to have, and then be done with it. And you're
there
not
is
done
no
with
done
it. This
with
is
it.
An ongoing dialogue.
And the questions get more intriguing, trust me.
Right, and you want to be in that mix. You want to have your voice in that mix. And here's a little bit of relief I can offer to parents. In all likelihood, your kids are far more comfortable talking about sex than you are, you know? And
I'm
there's
sure of it.
Ample opportunity all over the place. Like, you know, I think back to when my son was 11, 12, 13 years old, and we would watch, like, Friends together. And every once in a while, I would just pause the TV and say, okay, here comes an awkward moment, but we're going to talk about what happened with Joey just there, mm-hmm. and what that's all about.
Right.
We'll take 2 minutes, and then we'll move on. And
right.
if you do that, and you take this in little chunks instead of trying to tackle it all at once,
yeah.
you might find that your kids are interested and want to talk
sure.
about it. More often than not, you're going to get, ew, all right, gross, let's move on.
Why were the awkward moments always with Joey? You would think
it
they would have spread
Joey.
It out with the
yeah.
six
How
of them.
You doing?
Is there a particular book or pamphlet that you recommend for parents of all ages with kids of all ages? What do you recommend that they look at?
So there's a book out there called, I believe it's called Sex for Teenagers, but it's really intended for teenagers and parents to kind of work through together.
Yeah.
I hit on sex and sexuality in my book.
You do.
And there's a guy named Tom Phelan who wrote a book on parenting teenagers, and his book is great too.
Is the book Where Did I Come From still available? That was the book my parents used for my brother and myself, and it was fantastic.
It actually is fantastic, and it is still around.
Is
and
it?
You can still get your hands on that. And it's a nice, easy way to walk through the mechanics of it,
yeah.
Right? You know, where if you're uncomfortable with that, this gives you a nice, easy way to do that. So I encourage that, yeah.
You know, to me, and is it wrong that my boys ask me and not Jimmy Mack? Because he always seems to have to go walk the dog or go to the grocery store when they ask him questions, and he's very uncomfortable about it. I'm not, so it doesn't matter if it's a guy-girl thing, does it?
10 years ago, I think I would have said, no, it's important that it be with the same-sex parents so that the kids are as comfortable as they can be. Now, I find that to be wholly unnecessary. And I think there's something kind of cool about boys talking to their moms and girls talking to their dads about sex. You know, I think that the openness of that is really appealing and probably really good for the kids. And eventually your boys might, you know, pull Jimmy aside and ask him a question or two.
I can't wait to hear his answers. All right. And I know this is not fair to give to you, but there have been a bunch of people that I have come across who are discussing whether or not they as moms should buy condoms for their teenage sons going away to college.
My unequivocal absolute answer is yes. Yep. Because that becomes a matter of health and safety. It gives you the opportunity to talk not just about sex, but about respect for the opposite sex, and you know, and kind of get deep into a conversation that you need to have before your kids go off to school. Because you think about every story that's hitting now about college campuses, often has to do with something terrible that's happened with regard to rape or you know, a sexual assault. So boys, just as much as girls, need to be informed about how to be respectful, how to take care of, as best they can, some of the girls that they're affiliated with.
Yeah.
So, and
that doesn't mean you're okay with it that you provide condoms for your kids, but you're protecting them.
And you're being pragmatic and realistic, right? Most kids have sex by the time they're going to college, and to have our heads in the sand about that would be foolhardy.
What about having messages printed on them like, we love you, mom, that kind of
thing? Oh, my God. Can I tell you somebody would buy those? You have got to file that away.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
If that's not going to prevent them from having premarital sex, I don't know what.
Yeah. Sure inoculation.
John, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
It's Dr. John Duffy, The Available Parent is his book. Listen to his podcast on WGN Radio Plus. We'll take a quick break, then some news. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I don't know why they're not playing this song on The Preacher, on AMC's Preacher with Dominic Cooper. They should totally do it.
So perfect.
We have a guest in studio. It's an honor to meet you. She did that song. Joan Osborne, how are you?
I'm doing very, very well. How are you guys this morning?
We are so happy you're up here. That song right there made me want to take vocal lessons.
Okay,
why is that? Because it was just beautiful and moving, and I've been in love with your voice.
Well, thank you. Thanks so much.
And it has, Wendy already knows this, one of my favorite lyrics in the history of music, except for the Pope, maybe in Rome.
Yep. Yeah.
Beautifully written. Eric Bazillion's work, right?
Yeah, a guy named Eric Bazillion, who is in a band called the Hooters out of Philadelphia, wrote that song and co-wrote a lot of the other stuff on that Relish album that song is on. So. Mm-hmm.
So Bob Dylan, where does Bob Dylan come in? I was watching a video that there was it Ella Fitzgerald who did some compilations of her take on things?
Well, back in the 1950s and I believe the early 60s, she released a series of records, and it's now called the Songbook Series, where she picked a different writer and did a whole album devoted to each writer, people like Cole Porter and Harold Arlen and the people who are sort of considered to be, you know, great American songbook songwriters. And, you know, I always have had this in the back of my mind that I would love to do a similar project, but just pick the writers that I love and sort of update the idea. So this is this new album of Bob Dylan songs is kind of, you know, the first foray into what I hope will be a series like the Songbook series.
Give us a couple names. We're hoping that this becomes a series. So after Bob Dylan, give us a couple names of who's the future.
Well, that's a good question. You know, I have a lot of things in mind. I went on a real Lou Reed jag the other day because there's a ton of great songs of his. And of course, you know, he's got one of those voices which is very idiosyncratic, and my voice is very different. So right away, you're going to have a different take on some of those songs. You know, people like Tom Waits, I think, would be a great choice. I love Nick Cave. Many people have suggested the Grateful Dead songbook because I've worked with them in the past. So, you know, there's a lot of great ideas. I love Lucinda Williams as a writer. Even though she herself is a great singer, I feel like maybe there's a way for me to get into that material and do something fresh with it. So this could, I'm excited about the idea. I hope it really kind of, you know, takes off as like a parallel lane for me to travel in along with my own writing to do this as well.
Although you pick Bob Dylan as your first one, how do you decide in the catalog of songs, how do you decide which ones you're going
to
do?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was really the hardest thing was to just, there's hundreds and hundreds of brilliant songs. You know, for this album, what we, you know, my co-producers and I wanted to do is to pick things from all throughout his career. You know, a lot of people know his stuff from the 60s or from the 70s, but he's, you know, written great songs all throughout his career. So we've included stuff from his work in the 1980s and the 1990s and the 2000s. And that was one of the kind of criteria that we used. We also wanted to do some songs that people were very familiar with and then other things that they might not know. So you would have some nice surprises along with hearing songs that you, you know, are interested in hearing again in a different way. And then also just stuff that, you know, I was personally drawn to or connected to in some way. So we could definitely do another 4 or 5 or 6 or 10 records of Bob Dylan songs, you know, because there's plenty left over.
Is
for
he aware that you're doing this? Do you have to ask permission? How does that work?
Well, you know, you don't actually have to ask permission
to
sing a Bob
don't?
Song. No, you don't. You just have to pay him if you make money from it, you know. But his publishing company, the people who run that, we've been in touch with them and they've been very supportive and said, you know, whatever you need, we'd love to help you out. So I don't know if the man himself is aware or knows anything about it, but definitely the people in his...
yesterday's Facebook post.
Oh, that's right. His Facebook post...
He said, stop it, Joan. Finally, someone can understand my songs. That's what he said.
No, he did say something very very nice about it on Facebook. I don't know if it, if he himself writes his own Facebook posts. You know,
I bet he does.
Maybe he does. I don't know. I don't want to really expect or hope that. I mean,
but what a thrill for you if one of your idols all of a sudden is not only acknowledging it but giving you his blessing, going, "Yeah, I can't wait to hear it."
That would be wonderful. Yeah. I would be very excited. Yeah.
Would you like to introduce? Boy, that word just went out of my
mind.
Would you like to?
I think I should intervene right now.
Would you like to introduce the gentleman you brought up with you today?
Yes, yes. On the guitar, we have Mr. Jack Petruzzelli. who is also a co-producer of the record. And on keyboards, we have Mr. Keith Cotton, who is also a co-producer of the record.
Hey, guys. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
So the first song you selected is a fantastic song from the Bob Dylan catalog.
Yeah, this is a song that was a hit for Manfred Mann in the 1960s. And Jack had this great idea to put more of a gospel flavor on it for our version. So... So we are going to sing for you. Well, you'll know what it is. And boats. Some are building monuments, others jotting down notes. Everybody's in despair, every girl and boy. But when Quinn the Eskimo gets here, everybody's gonna jump for joy. Come on without, come on within. You'll not see nothing like the mighty Quinn. Come on without, come on within. You'll not see nothing like
like the mighty Quinn. Do just like the rest. I like my sugar sweet, but jumping cues and making haste ain't my cup of meat. Everybody's out in the trees feeding pigeons all under the limb, but when Quinn the Eskimo gets here, all the pigeons gonna run to him. Come on without, come on within, you'll not see nothing like the mighty Quinn. Come on without, come on within. You'll not see nothing like the mighty Quinn. Recite them all. Just tell me where it hurts you, honey. I'll tell you who to call. Nobody can get no sleep. There's someone on everybody's toes. But when Quinn the Eskimo gets here, everybody's gonna want a doze. Come on without, come on within. You'll not see nothing like the mighty Quinn. Come on without, come on within. You'll not see nothing like the mighty Quinn. Say, come on without, come on within. You'll not see nothing like the mighty Quinn. Come on without, come on within. You'll not see nothing like the mighty Quinn.
Could you try and have more fun together?
So beautiful.
Joan Osborne, so Jack beautiful. Petrozelli, Keith Cotton, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
I'll
yeah.
be hanging out tonight at City Winery. It's an 8 p.m. show. You can go to citywinery.com/Chicago or go to Joan's site, joanosborne.com. How do you have a voice this early in the morning?
Well, you know, I try to get enough sleep. It's not easy. And I did some warm-ups and drank a big coffee before.
The music world lends itself to going to bed early, doesn't it? Well, if you're in music, you usually go to bed around 9, 9:30.
Not so much, but, you know, I'm a mom, too, so I'm used to getting in bed early and getting up early.
How
so.
Old? Kids?
She's 12.
12.
Yeah.
Is she doing a tribute to Jacob Dylan?
I'll bring that up with
See
her,
if
but
she wants
she's
in on that.
She's not a big rock music fan. She's like, Mom, rock music is boring.
Really?
And yeah, that's what she said.
Wow.
She's more into pop music.
Yeah.
So
I had one like that too, a boy, and at 14, took him to a Van Halen show, and that changed everything.
Oh, there
you
go.
There's some advice for you.
We'll take a quick break, and then more ahead. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, we're bringing the fun here to the studios at WGN Radio. Joan Osborne is here, singer, songwriter. Someone has texted us. How was it working with the Funk Brothers? Pretty fun?
Oh, it was amazing. You know, the Funk Brothers are the original Motown studio band, and several years ago I got to perform with them as part of a movie called Standing in the Shadows of Motown.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a documentary about their lives and also a concert movie about people performing with them in live in Detroit. And, you know, to be on stage with those guys was just so amazing because they sounded just like those records, you
right.
know, and it's such a massive sound and such this, like this part of American musical DNA, you know, and just to be there with them was really inspiring. And I just felt so lifted up by them.
That's awesome. I'm halfway through that. I have to finish up that documentary.
Yeah,
it's really good.
It's a great story for real.
So right now, Joan Osborne has picked Bob Dylan, Songs of Bob Dylan. You will be appearing at City Winery tonight at 8 p.m. along with Jack and Keith, who are with you today.
That's right.
You can go to citywinery.com. Do you have time to do another song for us?
Sure, yeah. We'd like to do one off of the a new record, Songs of Bob Dylan. Here you go.
I water rising, rising night and day. All the gold and silver being stolen away. Big Joe Turner looking east and west from the dark room of his mind. He made it to Kansas City, 12th Street and Vine. There was nothing standing there. High water everywhere. Rising, shacks are sliding down. Folks lose their possessions and folks are leaving town. Bertha Mason shook it, broke it, then she hung it on a wall. Said you're dancing with whom they tell you to, or you don't dance at all. It's tough out there. High water everywhere. Got a craving love for blazing speed. Got a hopped up Mustang Ford. Jump into the wagon, love, throw your pennies overboard. I could write you poems, make a strong man lose his mind. I'm no pig without a wig, I hope you treat me kind. Things are breaking up out there. High water everywhere. High water rising, 6 inches above my head. Coffins dropping in the street like balloons made out of lead. Water Vicksburg, don't know what I'm gonna do. Don't reach out for me, she said. Can't you see I'm drowning too? It's tough out there. High water everywhere. Well, George Lewis, holy Englishman, the Italian and the Jew. You can't open up your mind, boys, to every conceivable point of view. They got Charles Darwin trapped out there on Highway 5. Judge says to the high sheriff, I want him dead or alive. Either one, I don't care. High water everywhere. Cuckoo is a pretty bird, she warbles as she flies. I'm preaching the word of God, I'm putting out your eyes. I asked Pat Nancy for something to eat, she said, take it off the shelf. As great as you are, man, you'll never be greater than yourself. I told her I didn't really care. High water everywhere. My broom, keeping away from the women, I'm giving them lots of room. Under rolling all the clocks, still everything is looking blue. I just can't be happy, love, unless you're happy too. It's bad out there. High water everywhere.
You are amazing. She's Joan Osborne, guitar, Jack Petrozelli, and keys, Keith Cotton, and percussion provided by Advil or Tylenol.
It's melatonin, actually.
Oh, that's the best. That's very healthy. Doesn't that song illustrate that Bob Dylan, at his core, is just a master storyteller?
Absolutely. And, you know, you think about this song, which was written, I guess, 18 years ago, and yet it's talking very directly to things that are happening in our world today. Yeah. And, you know, you could say the same for songs that he wrote 50 years ago. Mm-hmm. It really is a mark of the timelessness of his artistry. You know, it's the things that he is singing about and writing about are things that we are all struggling with right now.
Yep.
We were talking off the air. I took my 18-year-old son, Michael, to see Bob Dylan, and there was one point where he was shuffling around the stage, and we're like, oh, Bobby's got some new slippers. And then at some point, he was just standing very brave out there, and it's like, that's his, there's a new sheriff in town pose. You guys know what I'm talking about. You've seen
that.
Yeah,
I've seen him recently. Yeah, for sure.
Really fantastic.
Well, thank you so much for having us. We appreciate it.
Very quickly, where's the nose ring? What happened to the nose ring?
Oh, I lost that a long time ago.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? That's where it should be.
Maybe on the floor somewhere. Yeah, I don't know.
A pleasure to meet you. Really, you're an inspiration to many women singers out there. You have a wonderful voice. You're a great singer-songwriter. Joan Osborne, go see her tonight, citywinery.com. And Keith Cotton and Jack Petrozelli, thank you so much. Great job.
Thank you for having
us. Thanks, guys. A quick break. We'll find out what Steve has coming up next. It's